Welcome to today's SNEB webinar, sponsored by the Journal of Nutrition Education and Behavior. My name is Chloe Wilkerson, and I am the Membership and Meetings Coordinator for the Society for Nutrition Education and Behavior. Thank you for taking time to join us for today's presentation. Before we begin, I'd like to review a few pieces of information for you. If you look in the GoToWebinar toolbar on the side of your screen, you will see a section called Handouts. Here you will find slides for today's presentation. Feel free to download the slides and take notes as you follow along. We will take questions at the end of the presentation, so throughout, please type any questions you have into the questions section of GoToWebinar, and they will be moderated out to our speaker. When the webinar ends today, you will be prompted to complete a short survey. Please take a moment to complete this, as your feedback is greatly appreciated for future webinars. This webinar is being recorded, and it will be available free of charge to SNEB members under the Webinars tab of the website. Finally, watch for a follow-up email to be sent in the next few days that will include a link to the recording for this session, the slide handouts, and your CEU certificate. I will now hand things over to our moderator, Dr. Kristen DiFilippo, Assistant Teaching Professor at the University of Illinois. Kristen?
Thank you, Chloe. Today I get to introduce our speaker, Dr. Susan Martin Gold from the University of Northern Colorado. Sue has worked 13 years with SNAP Ed designing, implementing, and evaluating bilingual, computer-based nutrition education methods after completing community nutrition-based research projects for master's and doctoral degrees. She taught nutrition education and counseling courses at Colorado State University and University of Northern Colorado. At UNC, she was a faculty in residence, which provided brief nutrition education opportunities for college-age students using technology-based methods, including classroom response systems. She serves on the Journal of Nutrition Education and Behavior Board of Editors as well. I want to thank her for joining us today, and I am looking forward to hearing her presentation.
Thank you, Kristen and Chloe, very much. And all of you who have joined us today, I really appreciate the opportunity to share this information or from the journal article that was published in 2016. I'm also hoping that some of you may have things to add, and during our question and answer session, we'll be able to do that through the chat system. So let's go ahead and start. I do want to acknowledge three people who were very helpful in the publication of this article. And one is my husband, who actually just helped us get this software up and running too. My husband, Mike, he's used Clickers longer than I have and found that it was very engaging. He also helped in the literature review. Eric Milholland and I were he worked with me in a food science class, and he and I actually introduced Clickers, and that was my first experience. He also did a couple of research projects on that, doing his master's and PhD, which some of the information is based on. And then I also want to thank Christopher Devine, an associate professor from Robert Morris University, who helped me with the literature review during some recovery from emergency hip surgeries. So, oops, sorry about that. I am using a Mac, which is a little new to me, but it's good practice, I suppose. So our goal today is to review that JNEB article, but you will see that I have added some things to it. I haven't been all inclusive because there are a number of other examples in that article, but I will go over some of those. We'll describe the audience response systems. You'll hear them as classroom response systems, audience response systems, clickers. We'll look at the theoretical basis, and this is where Eric was very helpful to me. I'll go over the literature review, and actually the way I'll do that is looking at the benefits and challenges defined in the literature. I'll talk about my use of foods, of classroom response systems in foods, nutrition, and dietetics, higher education, and give you some examples. And then I'll provide some guidance for that implementation, particularly for those of you who are thinking about doing it. Okay. And again, I hope that you will add some of your experiences and some of your guidance and tips too, for the benefit of all the participants. All right. So, as an introduction, technology does provide a means to enhance or revise pedagogy and engage students. classroom projection systems. Many of you, of us use these. In fact, some of us probably remember slides and overhead projectors. But in the start of being able to use, particularly on overhead, we could draw on them and add some of that enhancement. Learning management systems, Blackboard, Canvas, Desire to Learn, Moodle, all of those have helped us, perhaps all of us, those who use it anyway, to engage our students, maybe provide some pre-class information, help in the review sessions, maybe provide some quizzes. And in my case, I've actually used them to administer exams. Then classroom response systems. When I did this review, I was really surprised that there were actually these response systems have been available since about 1960, in the 1960s, because they provided two-way communication. Many of them, us have used them at meetings. In fact, last year, I believe it was at FENSE in 2018, they had it on our phones. So that's the same type of system that we're talking about here. These CRS systems have actually augmented our projection systems and made them more two-way. So if we think about PowerPoint, it tends to be one way. Yes, we can add some video, we can add some animation, but these clickers help us so that we can get some responses to some of our information that we're providing. We can use formative and summative questions. We can enhance discussion, and I'll give those examples here in a few minutes. And we can also receive timely feedback in case there are misunderstandings or misconceptions, or we just want to make sure that that student understands before we move on to the next content. Okay, so let's take a look at these systems. Again, some of you may be very familiar with them, some of you may be not. It is composed of three basic items. One is the handheld device or the clicker, which transmit the signal. Many of you, or some of you, or even I have, in the last couple years, some of students have been actually using their phones. And we'll talk a little bit about the advantages and disadvantages of that a little bit later. These transmit a radio frequency, but the handheld devices like a clicker actually transmit a radio frequency or an infrared signal to the computer or the receiver, I should say. The radio frequency is more common now just because it doesn't have to be in line of sight, whereas the infrared, one of the disadvantages is if you had a pole in the middle of a classroom, that student who was behind the pole might not have their signal register in the receiver or received by the receiver. The receiver is connected to the computer. It receives the signal. And then the computer software interfaces with that display program. And it, such as it can be with a Microsoft PowerPoint. I've actually used two different clicker systems. One actually interfaced directly with it. And actually, you did have an option to lay it on top, but the second one actually laid on top so that I didn't always have to use PowerPoint. I could actually have a Word document up and type a question in and then pull it. Or you might be on a website and ask which item you like. And there's a lot that can be of flexibility with different systems. So when we get to the point of deciding whether you want to implement, this type of system might be of interest to you. That may help you decide. So for example, Turning Technologies is the one that actually can interface with PowerPoint, and actually clickers do too, but the polling is actually in the PowerPoint for Turning Technologies, whereas with iClickers, it's on top of it as a separate entity. But your PowerPoint slide can still be used as the basis for your question. Excuse me. That computer software will collect, aggregate, and present responses as real-time histograms, as you can see in this particular histogram. So I asked the question. They select their answer or what we call vote. A lot of times they'll use the clicker people will use the term vote. The receiver will receive it and then move it into that, the computer software. And then I can afterwards display that histogram. Now, something that's just is kind of fun to do sometimes is when we have a question that's difficult or people are struggling with, sometimes I'll actually display that histogram while they're voting to see what kind of influence they might have. So there's some things you can do to play around with it. That collected data is saved in a date time labeled file. It's reported by variables such as questions, so I can look at the questions and what how many answers were true, how many were false, and how many were maybe. Or I can look at it by individual student. Now, the student, the data that shows, obviously, is aggregated. The student's data is confidential, so you don't they don't have to worry about it being shown to the rest of the class. It can be exported into your learning management system. Some are easier than others. And then it can also be saved as a comma separated delimited file to be imported into a spreadsheet. I know a colleague who does his spreadsheet. He organizes in a spreadsheet and then moves it into his LMS. It can be used to put into a database or even put into statistical programs. We did that using clickers in a family night presentation where these families or parents would do the clickers. We were not able to identify them, but then you could use that clicker over and over and over again. And fortunately, we were able to quantify those data and use it for some reporting. So that's the basic system. The theoretical basis, this was really interesting to me when I was doing researching for this article, and the stimulus response came up quite often in the literature. And that's basically you ask a question, that student receives immediate feedback, whether it's a right or wrong question, or how their opinion relates to the rest of the class. Okay. The Kolb's experiential learning cycle. And this is the one that Eric actually developed, and it makes a lot of sense. And so that's why I spent some time in the article about that learning cycle. Let's take a look at this figure, that theoretical basis. So the idea is that it's a four-staged experiential model, and it's a cycle. And I want to emphasize that although I have numbered these here, a student can actually come in at any point on this. I just did the numbering so that we could do an example, somewhat of an example. So there's a series of conflict, confrontation, and resolution events to learn a concept or develop a viewpoint. So let's take a look from starting with concrete experience. And this is where clickers come in. So I display a question, and this might be knowledge, skill, opinion. I could actually do behaviors and values too. So a number of different types of questions can be used. I display that question, the students respond, and then we display those collective answers in a histogram so that all the students can view what their classmates responded. Okay. It's anonymous so that Susie does not know what Carol is answering unless they actually talk about it and share it, which I'll talk about here in a minute. Collective answers are displayed on the histogram and possibly discussed. So that moves into that reflective observation. And the students compare their answers to each other. They reflect if their own answer differs from the correct or majority. And I have found this is a good place where discussion comes out. And wait a minute. But I read in the book that this answer seems to be more appropriate. So we can go back and look at what that book said versus what the answer was and then discuss it. And that actually develops some higher level learning, as some authors have mentioned. The term that Kolb uses is called cognitive flux. And that's where, do I change my answer or do I, based on what I've read, I as the student have read and looked at and considered, do I change my answer or do I continue to keep my own? And often this is with opinions too. Then there might be, reflective observation. Then we look at abstract conceptualization. So the student starts to learn new ideas or possibly modify their existing knowledge. Oh, I didn't realize, as the student, I didn't realize I could use that concept and do another type of question. And that's where I used quite a few, is I would give the concept and we'd try different types of questions that would use that concept in a little bit different way. Because as many of you know, if you teach, often the student wants to know the right or wrong answer. And yes, there may be a right or wrong answer, but how do you get to that? And I believe that clickers can really help somebody, a student, do that, or many students. Obviously, students learn in different ways. And then there's active experimentation. Students apply that new information to their own domain. An example I give is when we did assessment in exercise nutrition, I would have them look at how many push-ups could they do. And then we applied it to the assessment model. So it's using their own experiences. Have them figure out what their energy expenditure is. So, and again, there's not going to be right or wrong answers to that, but we can display it and show the variation in energy expenditures between men and women, different sizes, etc. Okay. So that's a nice theoretical basis to think about when using clickers and how they might, and at each point in this, how they might be used. So let's take a look at the literature, since that is a good portion of the article. It's been used and evaluated in varied courses. But however, in 2016 and before, there were very few in foods, nutrition, and dietetics. The two that I found that were significant were the Wirtz et al., the classroom response systems. She used them in, she and her colleagues, I should say, in introductory nutrition course. And she found that the benefits actually outweighed the limitations. And I'll talk about those benefits. I'll use some of her work in those benefits versus limitations here in a few minutes. Hammond and colleagues actually researched using a case-based study method, including the classroom response system, to teach upper level undergraduate nutrition courses. So we're looking at probably a lower level and an upper level. However, they do qualify and say that the outcomes might be related to the pedagogical method rather than not specifically the classroom response system. Sorry, just need to get a drink of water here. So keep that last comment in mind, that the outcomes are probably related to the pedagogical method and not specifically the classroom response system. Because when I summarize the literature, we'll see why that's significant. Primarily, evaluations were, measured student acceptance. Learning outcome, and this is over a number of different academic content places. Learning outcomes, there were mixed, significant in health professional education review, but not for economics and geography final exam grades. And again, The challenge is to separate the classroom response system use with the pedagogical integration. Okay. So let's take a little bit of, let's look at the benefits and limitations, and I'll talk about the literature that supports and both of those items. Oops, got to the wrong space there. So the authors actually categorize the benefits differently, but they include similar and overlapping characteristics. And so what I tried to do was organize it into an understandable way of looking at clickers and their benefits. And we'll start with benefits. Atlantis and Chima actually identified three strategies, and they fit really well into those benefits: motivational, learning-based, and assessment. So let's take a look at each of those. Motivational, active participation tends to make students a little bit more motivated, and that they have found in any evaluations. So being able to engage and or actively participate, answer questions, possibly talk with their colleagues. So, for example, insensitive topics such as students in a large sexual health course. Vale Smith and her colleagues covered that. 80% were very comfortable. Another 17% were comfortable using clickers to answer sensitive questions. So that's 97% provided active participation because they felt comfortable. And then 66% and 30% discovering fellow students' opinions was very helpful. And or helpful, respectively, to promote their own learning. And then 72% were more likely to answer some questions more honestly with clickers than raising hands. So that active participation is a benefit, and it's motivational, according to Atlantis and Chima. Engagement. Quinn. Questions can challenge the students to consider the human behavior in a social environment, such as it's a key to discussion. For instance, let's say you had a yes, no, maybe question. Of you who responded yes, why did you respond yes? And hopefully that stimulates some discussion. You're getting back a little bit into those students who do discuss tend to answer those, but those who don't at least will be in that listening mode. So there's some engagement there. I have found in the classes I teach, they tend to be a little bit smaller and upper division, that the students did become more engaged with discussion, particularly if you ask a question that might have two possible answers. Or the other thing is to ask questions that have I don't knows on it. I've had those sometimes provide some engagement, or other, and I'll show you some examples here in a minute. Accountability. This provides, Thampy said that it in a medical course, said that this provides a peer-based benchmarking tool. So you display the histogram, and students can actually see what other students are answering, whether it's the right or wrong answer. Now, the accountability, Beatty said that it focuses on the understanding rather than the answer so much. Yes, you have that accountability, but then we can go ahead and discuss the whys, or what is the supporting information for that particular answer. And then again, Wirtz et al. In that undergraduate nutrition course, there's some showing of some shared beliefs. So accountability is a very broad term here. It can be quantitative, but it can also be qualitative. And then we have the learning-based strategies that Atlantis and Chima qualify as some of the benefits. Practice. Clickers provide the ability to to reiterate concepts and apply those concepts. Peer learning. In my classes, I encourage students to actually talk with each other to determine whether, you know, is this answer correct, or how do I figure out this answer, or why do you think it is, or maybe I'm not sure. But I usually gave them about a minute to answer the question so that they would have time to talk with each other. Sometimes it's one student, other students. Sometimes it's a group of students. That I let them do what would benefit them the most. Some instructors actually do this without it in the, I think it's called pair and share. There's a term for it. So some of you may actually already use this without even using clickers. It also is a safe place to compare the answers in smaller groups before answering with the class. It may actually stimulate Kolb's cognitive flux in that peer learning. Oh, I hadn't thought about it that way. Oh, that's how you do this. And then they can answer. And of course, it makes them feel good when they get it right. But it also makes them feel good when they can help teach other people. Again, learning-based derives from discussion. For example, medical patient cases integrated classroom response system questions and clinical decision points. And this particular instructor actually had alternative answers, and based on the class's response, it went on to a different scenario. And I have somewhat of an example of that in my example slides that I'll talk about. But it gave alternative options to help students develop problem solving and clinical reasoning. And although I did not teach a clinical-based class, I can see how this might be used. I have used it in case studies, but primarily I did it in a menu planning exercise. So again, we're looking at focusing on student learning outcomes as opposed to just covering content. And keep that in mind as we go through and you think about this. A lot of us think, oh my gosh, I am not going to be able to cover all of this content and use clickers. And I'll hopefully give you some strategies that will help alleviate some of those concerns. Okay, in fact, this next one, the assessments, the benefits of assessment, it's immediate. It is immediate feedback. I understand this concept. Again, I'm speaking as the student. It measures comprehension for both the student and the instructor. For instance, I could do a question at the beginning of class to gauge the understanding of something we might have covered in the previous class so that I can go on to new content, or maybe how much they understand of the information that they read before coming to class. So I know how much I need to cover. Sometimes we will cover information that students already understand. And maybe all we need to do is just give a quick example and move on. It also helps to identify viewpoints of students. And then it empowers those students to take that information and use it in the next step. Identifying misconceptions. I couldn't believe how many times there were misconceptions on information that needed to be addressed before we moved on. So that's very helpful before moving on to the next concept. Also, it could guide instruction or contingent teaching. By using those first two items, I can say, oh, I don't necessarily need to go over this information in detail. Maybe I use a couple of clicker questions to just show that they do comprehend. Or maybe I need to spend a little bit more time on this misconception before we move on to the next concept. So it can help guide instructions. So a person does need to be flexible and be able to do some contingent teaching. Now, summative evaluation, there are some, I haven't done summative evaluation using clickers because I have such small classes. I just have integrated it in, but I do know of instructors who have done it for not only course quizzes, but they've also done it for exams. And I actually considered it for one of my classes, but chose to use the LMS and use a computer lab. And I wasn't always able to get a computer lab. But I did set it up as a potential for exams if I wouldn't have been able to use a computer lab. Again, my classes were small enough. The issue with summative, and we'll get to that when we talk about challenges, is making sure that the system works well so students aren't stressed. But it has been done. And it's been evaluated less frequently, so there isn't a lot of literature on it yet, and with some challenges. So I want to ask that we looked at the strategies as some of the benefits. But again, I want to emphasize that there's an overlap. So another conceptual framework from Blocko and Arcus in 2013, they did social science programs, looked at it with interactivity, collaborative learning, and engagement, which is very similar to what we've talked about. But if you're interested further, that citation is available. Another benefit that five author groups identified easily as one of the most important benefits of, and it probably fits under motivational learning, but I chose to put it separately just because of the importance of it, is the anonymity. That is that students can answer a little more honestly, we hope, on knowledge and opinion questions because their answer is anonymous to the other students. Okay. They can interact while in maintaining that anonymity. The results are aggregated before they're shared. And again, it was identified in the literature as one of the most important benefits of using clickers. Okay. So let's move to the challenges. I need to check my time. Wow, time goes fast. So the instructors, learning, and this is probably one of the important things for you all. It does take a little bit of learning. Unless you've already are a little bit comfortable with it by using it, or you have a good mentor, or you've obviously used it a little bit. It may be intimidating and it may be a little time intensive at first. It also requires new pedagogical skills, more interaction, less just didactic lecture. And then that, again, that contingent teaching or adjusting spontaneously is important. So we become facilitators or coaches rather than lecturers. Okay. It does relinquish some class control, particularly if you use the peer teaching type model where students discuss their answers before they respond. And then you bring the class back to what's the next content information. So we do release some control that we hopefully are stimulating some discussion. Wirtz and her group, Caldwell, Adams, and Columba, they said one of the benefits of that is that contingent teaching is that we can skip over those things that students already know, or at least just cover it very briefly. Technical support is critical. For example, my experience was at Colorado State University, I used iClickers, went to sessions, had people help me, had people come into the classroom to help me. I had that technical support. When I moved to UNC or the University of Northern Colorado, they were using the Turning Technologies again, I went to all the, not all, but many of the sessions. I had people come in and help me. I used slides and information from other instructors and was able to change over fairly easily. I actually was able to use some of my slides from previously too, just had to integrate them into the Turning Technology software or application. Interestingly, during my 9 years at the University of Northern Colorado, we changed back to iClicker. So I, again, went to the sessions to learn and go back to the iClicker response systems. So, but that I do believe that that technical support is important. And the reason I know, do know some instructors did not switch to iClickers, but I felt as though the technical support for both myself and for the students was really important. So I chose to go change back, even though they had to get a new clicker. The other reason I did that, getting a little off here, is that way the students who were starting wouldn't have to buy new, they would have their clicker because they were providing a really good deal throughout their whole session at the University of Northern Colorado. Outcomes are equivocal in the literature. So do I start using clickers when really the evidence is only strong in students like it? For instance, couple authors found that students rated the technology highly, but the final exam and course scores did not differ between the user and the non-user classes. Now, what was interesting about that study is that the exam score variances were smaller, which may indicate that there's potential for learning among all students. So there, you know, we may have to look at those data a little bit differently than just the absolute amounts from the exam scores and the class grades. So, students, registering and maintaining, these are some of the challenges that came up in the literature. Registering, using, maintaining the device. Sometimes that can be a deterrent or a stress factor for students. Excuse me. Now, many of them register right through the LMS session, the LMS system, excuse me. Sometimes what I will do is actually, particularly if I have a classroom with computers or if a lot of students have their computers, I'll have them register right then and there. Or I actually provided instructions on the LMS so that they could, most of them could do it before they came to class. And then if they had questions, obviously I would help them. Using to take exams. This was another reason, one that we don't have the evidence to show it's a good way yet. Hopefully some authors are doing it now, but also students get, with exams, they're stressed enough as it is, and clickers might make that more stressful for some students. I actually, as I mentioned, administer my exams on computers because I do pre-class quizzes, so I figure they're comfortable with that. But I have had a couple students who are not as comfortable with on the computer exams as they are with paper exams. The cost can vary, depends on the device, license fee. More are becoming using portable electronic devices. The last couple years, I have actually allowed that to be used, the phones, obviously with the caveat, please use it only for the polling. The challenge with using phones or electronic portable devices, I do have some students have actually used iPads too. Some of those challenges are inconsistent Wi-Fi connections in different classrooms. It became better the last year I taught. The license fees may be per semester, per year, multi-license. One thing that Sorry, I went back up, but I did want to mention this. I had a couple students, their license ended in the middle of the semester. So I had to consider what was I going to do for these particular students when their license ended in the middle of the semester, because they had bought it in fall and it ended in 6 months. So for that particular class, I felt comfortable just allowing them to do paper because it was a small class, but in the future, I would have done something differently probably. Portable, let's go back to portable. The potential distraction of multifunctional devices is a challenge. Students see their email pop up, they see their text pop up, and it's very hard to not look at it. So I understand that. I actually had a student who took his notes on his phone. That was an interesting situation. So it's interesting. Another option potentially is to use the university purchased devices. We have a couple of departments who actually purchased. So therefore you could actually try them before. This would be a way you could try them. This gets more into the implementation, but that does take time to hand them out and distribute them and pick them back up again. So some pluses and minuses to that, but at least it does take the cost off of them. Costs for the license for a phone app was about $15 a semester during the last year that I taught, or during 2018, 2019. Overall, the literature suggests that classroom response systems benefits outweigh the challenges when used with appropriate pedagogy. So let me show you some of my experiences, or talk about some of my experiences. I've used them in various courses. In fact, I've used clickers in every course that I taught at the University of Northern Colorado, sometimes due to the length of the class, et cetera. So I'll give you a few examples here. One other thing I want to mention is that in all of my classes, the clickers support but don't replace the pedagogy. Okay. So food science, and I have a couple, an example later on that I'll do it, but food science allows you to have the students describe why things happen. Why, if I use cake flour versus bread flour versus cake flour, what happens and why? So I can get that information. And then perhaps they see it and can apply it to another baked item or understand the concept that the protein that is higher in bread flour and you don't have the and will provide a tougher product. Okay. Food service applications and management. This particular course actually was 2 hours and 45 minutes on a Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock. So I really had to think about how to integrate not only clickers, but other types of pedagogy. So my didactic, I use the clickers, usually about a 50 to 60 minute lecture, and I'm using air quotes here, but I had clickers in there and some opinion questions, and I'll show you an example here in a minute. Nutrition assessment. This is a great way to use clickers to show how food frequencies differ from 24-hour recalls. I had a lot of fun using this in my exercise nutrition class. Nutrition education and counseling. For example, in this class, I would use I actually have an example later, so I'm going to show you that later. I used it in a nutrition for pre-nursing students where we talked about a little medical nutrition therapy. So again, that nutrition assessment came up, and also what would you focus on in this particular scenario? For example, in somebody who has high cholesterol and lipid markers, what would you focus on? The total calories, the total fat, saturated fat, or other? And this provided the impetus. There wasn't really a correct answer, but what it provided me or us, the class, was an opportunity to discuss each of those and why students chose it. So that was how I used it in that particular course. And then I've already mentioned exercise nutrition. I used a lot of case studies, and we were able to do some calculations or some decision making with it. I've used it in classes that were 15 to 70 students. And these are the type of questions I've used were vocabulary, concepts, case studies, opinions, and games. And I'll show you a game here in a few minutes. Course evaluation comments. These have been mixed, and I'll show you what I received up until 2016, because I haven't done this is based on the article. Supportive, interactive, engaging. They enjoyed discussions. They were the fact that we were presenting to all learning styles, those who needed a little bit more time, those who needed to be able to discuss with peers. And as you can see at the bottom, using notes and peers, so that they know where to find information. I also encourage them to bring their textbooks for those classes with large textbooks. You know, get in a group of three or four people and one of you bring it one day and one of you bring another, so that they could use that and know where to find the information. They really liked receiving participation points for coming to class. I never used the term attendance. I use the term participation because that's truly what I was striving for. And it was up to about 20% of their grade were participation points, because they not only received points for participating, but some questions actually received points for right and wrong answers. So not everybody received all the participation points. But I didn't make it so heavy duty on the right and wrong answer that they were frustrated. So there was deeper concept review. I thought that was really insightful of a student to write that, really looking at that concept in more than one way and in a way that I as a student might be able to understand. The non-supportive, the cost, especially if it was the final semester. I used these in the first semester I taught a food service management class, and those students had not used them before. So that was something that I learned very obviously, that perhaps not a good idea on a final semester class that they may not have used clickers before. Unclear clicker questions. And a lot of this is trial and error, but also I'll talk about an implementation. When you design questions, sometimes using some of the question banks and making them a little simpler are really good ways to start. Or using questions that somebody else has used, or maybe questions you've used in a class before. Few wanted more teaching, less participation. So again, going back to that learning style, some of them, as you may have, are very much that you tell me what I need to know, and that's what I'm going to do. I don't need a whole lot of practice with this. So those were the summary of the course evaluations across about 100 students. So implementation. I'm going to go through this fairly quickly because I'd rather get to questions and answers. So ask yourself, will it enhance? Do you have the available technical assistance? Assess your self-willingness to modify your pedagogy. Is it really am I really ready to do that? Build it in based on clear, measurable learning objectives. And for those of us in the dietetics area, this could be an incredible way to know whether we've met those learning objectives. Start with one course, maybe the first in a series, such as a food science course, or maybe an intro to nutrition. Initially, add about 1 hour per course credit to prepare. Okay. About 3 to 8 questions per 50 to 60 minutes. Spread them out. Use some at the beginning, some at the end. Again, that keeps your people from being late. That also keeps them from leaving early. Formats are there. Some will actually support short answers. The turning technology, the more complicated ones did. So again, I've mentioned current questions, activities, other CRS users, test banks, specific pedagogical purpose. What are you looking at to do? And then vary the timing before, during, and after the learning concepts. I did some at the beginning of class to make sure that the reading was done, or to go over questions that were on the pre-class reading quiz. So here's some examples. This is an easy one, which of a muffin is overmixed. You all can probably know that it's the first one, but this is where they can articulate those characteristics as well as why. So Jeopardy, this one was fun to use. We have a class that has three different concepts, food safety, cultural foods, and some quantity foods items. And so I did this as a final lab quiz, but it was more of just for fun. And this one is supported by Turning Technologies, and it actually adds up the points, has the sound and the whole bit. But it was and the students really had fun, and it tracked the most valuable player, so we know who the student was. Okay, male cardiac patient. I use this in assessment as well as in exercise nutrition. Interview component. I also did this. Not only did this was an opinion question that was confidential. We did role playing. And then they could answer it. And we also did which one do they need to work on. But again, it was confidential and we could discuss it. And I found that students were very receptive of this. Hospital food. This is where we actually did one of those contingent things where it was we did a menu and then we discussed the final menu. I had about 8 slides of this, entree, vegetables, etc. And we had we discussed the final menu. And then this is just another one, which one's lactose free. And we could discuss that, some of the items that were in there that might clue us that there may be, milk products in here. So these are the implications. You obviously can read that. I've mentioned this several times, but I do want to get to questions. So let me see if there's anything else. Oh, I guess we are ready. All right.
So thank you so much. It was great to hear about your article and the work that you've done using clickers in the classroom. We do have one question, and if anyone else has questions, please go ahead and type those in the question box now, and I can moderate those out. So the first question is, if clickers are student-owned, are you aware of issues with students remembering to bring them to class?
Yes, there could be issues with that. And what I did policy-wise is I allowed for 2 makeup, if you will, paper versions. They were deducted a little bit just because it's only fair to students who do remember that they received full credit. But I did allow that. What was helpful with adding the phone to it, the portable device, is that if they did forget their clicker, they could often go online and use that. So they didn't, and then that was considered full participation.
Okay.
So I did have a contingency in there so that if a student forgot their clicker, they were not penalized totally.
So then they turn in a paper version.
Exactly. Exactly. So that I still had documentation and they still participated. But the thing with the paper is they could actually write the answer down after we gave the answer. So I felt like it wasn't fair to give them full credit, but I gave anywhere from 70 to 80% credit for somebody who forgot their clicker. Just because
I
wanted to reinforce the participation.
That makes sense. I know something I've been to is I've allowed so many misses. So over the course of the semester, maybe you could miss a day's worth or 2 days worth of clicker responses before I started penalizing you to account for those days where maybe the clicker wasn't working. I've done that with my larger classes where having a large number of papers coming in would be
a pain. Absolutely. And what I do also is I have the total points possible. Let's say I have 100 points possible for participation. I will actually have 110 points. What's the word?
Available.
Exactly. So yeah. That if they do come to every single class, they actually end up with some extra participation points. Or if they miss a class, it's not as much of a devastation as if they didn't. So that does help. Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you. A note that one listener wanted to give was that there are free Jeopardy games that can be made online at Jeopardy Labs. I haven't seen that, but that's definitely something I might look at.
Yes, there are a number of them. Yeah, and what I was trying to do is figure out in the iClicker how I could make one of those into more of an automated and keep the score, et cetera. That's what the Turning Technologies does. It is so fantastic. But so I haven't had the opportunity to use the Jeopardy Labs. Well, I take that back. When we were in the as a faculty in residence, I went to a program one time in the biology learning community, and she actually used the Jeopardy Lab templates for learning. So they're really fun. They are fun. Yeah.
Good way to keep the students interacting.
Absolutely.
For sure. Well, I want to thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today.
Could I ask a question?
Sure.
So just quickly, I had intended to ask this at the beginning, but just quickly, could the participants tell me, do you use the clickers or are you more likely to consider using a clicker now that you've heard some of this information? So if you could just share that very briefly with me on the chat.
So we have one person saying they're not currently a clicker user, but may consider. Another person says doesn't use, interested in thinking about it. Someone else has done it with CRS.
Have limited, yeah. So what I'd like to do is I put my email on the front slide, and I would be happy to engage with anybody who's interested, give you more information, give you some more examples. Have a phone call with you if you would like to, if you have questions or concerns that I might be able to help you with.
Yeah. Thank you for being willing to do that and be a resource for people.
Absolutely. And Mary, the person who, sorry, I shouldn't say the name, right, I guess. Thank you for the suggestion about the Jeopardy Labs. Because even if you're not thinking about clickers, that's a way to engage students. Okay.
Well, thank you, Sue, for sharing your research with us. And thank you, Kristen, for moderating today's session. Just a few reminders for attendees before I close out. Please do complete the survey you will receive when I close this session. Your feedback is greatly appreciated for future webinars. Be on the lookout for an email in the next few days with today's recording, handouts, and your CEU certificate. If you enjoyed today's webinar, be sure to mark your calendar for our next couple of webinars, one coming up on Friday, October 11th at 12 p.m. Eastern, and our next Journal Club webinar on Monday, October 14th at 1 p.m. Eastern. This concludes today's session. Thank you for joining us, and have a great day.
Thank you.